What to do about the treatment of coronavirus? We know a vaccine is at least months away, but what about possible treatments? Nevin Krogan is here. He is the professor of cellular molecular pharmacology at UCSF. And professor, good to have you with us.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
I know a lot of very smart minds are working very hard on treatment and the possible drugs. We know that chloroquine is not the right answer, at least not drinking it out of your fish tank. We found that out in Phoenix, Arizona yesterday. What are you working on?
So we started to work on this virus in January, and when it became apparent about mid-February that this was going to be a pandemic, and that a city and our university, I got to the lab and I told everybody in my group, about 30 individuals, to stop everything they're doing and start working on this coronavirus. And that extended to 22 other labs at UCSF in an unprecedented manner, I would argue. And we're also collaborating with groups around the world, including Mount Sinai Hospital in New York and the Pasteur Institute in Paris. And what we've done in San Francisco here is to systematically map.
We're getting a little bit of trouble with your cell phone there. Maybe you could find a slightly different location.
Right. Is that better right now?
That's much better. Thank you.
So what I was just saying is that in an unprecedented way, the scientists in San Francisco have come together and have collaborated with scientists around the world. And what we've done here in San Francisco is systematically map the connections between the 29 coronavirus genes and proteins. There's only 29. With the connections in our cells, there's 20,000 genes or proteins. So we've identified 332 proteins that we think the virus may need during the course of infection as the virus hijacks our cells.
Okay.
And what we've done here is cross-reference these 332 human proteins with drugs or compounds that are being used presently to treat other diseases. So in an effort to try to repurpose these drugs, we've identified a set of 69 based on this blueprint, this map that we've generated, comprised of 332 human proteins. These are both FDA-approved drugs as well as drugs that are in the clinic or pre-clinic. And now we're collaborating with scientists in New York and Paris who have the virus growing in their lab to test to see if any of these drugs or compounds have any effect on the virus. And actually in a couple hours, we're actually going to get our first results from New York.
Very good. Does anything look more promising than another at this point?
Well, out of the 69, 27 of them are FDA-approved drugs. And ironically, one of them is actually chloroquine. And from the surface, looking at this, you'd say, all right, chloroquine, why would this work? This is an anti-malarial drug, right? And some of these antibiotics, they target bacteria. Well, we're trying to fight a virus. However, if these drugs actually target human proteins that the virus needs, this is called host-directed therapy,
right,
this could have a beneficial effect. So initially I was saying, I don't see how chloroquine could work. The data to suggest maybe chloroquine can work, and we actually have some suggestions about the underlying biology. However, that being said, many, many more tests are required. Just like Dr. Fauci is saying, we need to understand this at every single level. We don't want people taking this type of thing into their own hands and ingesting this, as you alluded to earlier.
Yeah, not a good idea. And Professor, okay, so with this in mind, this sounds very promising. What are we looking at in terms of a timeline? You talked about getting some results back later today. And where do we go from there? And what's the time frame you're looking at where you can come out and say these drugs are effective against this disease?
Well, so the tests that are being carried out right now in New York and Paris are essentially being done in a petri dish in human cells. They have a ferret model, I think, now working in New York with the coronavirus, which is very exciting. So there has to be some mammalian testing. But again, if you're going to focus on FDA-approved drugs, you know, the problem there is the problem with drugs normally is it takes 6 years to get something into someone's body. And that's because toxicity issues. The great thing about FDA-approved drugs is that the toxicity issues have already been taken into account.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you wanted to get something fast, I think this is probably the best way to do it. You're talking about a vaccine. That could take years. That may never exist. We still don't have a vaccine for HIV. So what we're trying to do is just that we generated this map. We've made some predictions. We've got that out to the scientific community. And people can test these in the laboratory. A lot of tests are required. Or they can use this map to make other predictions about other therapeutic avenues that they can take. But we need to have the results. There needs still to be testing to be done. And it would be months, I would argue.
What is the urgency quotient that you feel as a scientist?
Well, you know, trying to help people, obviously, and another kind of level of urgency was trying to get this data collected before the university shut down. And we actually got this data collected just several hours before they shut down University of California in San Francisco. And what we're doing now, I would argue, in an unprecedented way, is sharing this information with people around the world. And right now, we had a call yesterday with about 100 scientists on Zoom. I've never seen that before. And what we're doing is discussing this data, analyzing it, getting this information out to others that could test it in different parts of the world. So a silver lining, I would argue, in all of this is that we've broken down silos. You know, science is usually very siloed and individualistic, but we're seeing in an unprecedented way scientists coming together at UCSF, scientists coming together across the world, and even academia and pharma coming together in an unprecedented way. And I think what we're doing is changing the paradigm of science. We're building up an infrastructure that will be much more prepared for the next pandemic, COVID-22 or whatever, you know, virus comes or other disease comes our way. So that's, I would argue, a silver lining in all of this. I hope that we can sustain this type of approach, collaborative approach, by breaking down silos going forward.
Is there anything we've learned from past pandemics and circumstances like SARS in the early 2000s that are can be applied here?
Well, you know, SARS, fortunately, was brought under control because it wasn't as infectious. The mortality rate was much higher, but it wasn't as infectious. And there was a lot of work going on in SARS back in 2003. However, when it got under control, a lot of the funding dried up. And that was very unfortunate. I think if that work would have continued, we'd be in a much better shape right now. So this coronavirus pandemic, there's going to be a lot of research in it, but even when it dies down and the dust settles, we got to continue working on this, because as I said, there's going to be the next one and the next one and the next one.
Right.
And what we found here, which I think is very exciting, is that when you look across many different pathogens, many different viruses, they're attacking the same human proteins. So one goal here is to come up with a treatment or a drug that could be used for this coronavirus, the next coronavirus, and many other viruses as well. So that's a longer-term vision for our group.
Very good. One more question for you, Professor, and that is, with the closure of colleges and they're at UCSF, how does that hinder your job right now?
Well, right now, those focused on COVID-19 research are still allowed. However, our heroic scientists are going in shifts so that they're not in close proximity with other scientists. So it's definitely slowed the pace of research here. However, that being said, via Zoom and other technologies, we're communicating with scientists around the world, which to me has been so exciting. And it's amazing actually what one can get done remotely. So this is really going to change science going forward, in my opinion.
Very good, Professor Nevin Krogan. Thank you for being with us, sir, and I look forward to our next conversation, which will not be long from now.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. That is the Professor of Cellular Molecular Pharmacology at UCSF, Professor Nevin Krogan. Some very good information and some promising information from the professor, too.